Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Stone Payton, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio, and this is going to be a good one. This is a buddy of one of our buddies, right, Stone?
Well, he's a good friend and trusted colleague of Mac and Rhea Story, but I say we give him the benefit of the doubt, okay? I think he's going to be fantastic. No, we actually had a chance to visit with this gentleman briefly here in the Business Radio X offices last week, and it became very apparent very quickly. We had to get this guy on the air, talk about his work. Please join me in welcoming to the broadcast with Boss LLC to talk a little bit about bridging the gap, Mr. Lawrence Henderson. How are you this morning, sir?
Doing fantastic. Thank you, gentlemen, for bringing me on today.
Now, Lawrence, what does Boss do for folks? How are you helping people?
Well, I just want to break out that acronym because most folks that can't see it and understand what it means. It's business.
It's in small print.
It's in very small print. Business Operational Support Services, LLC. But what I do for folks is I bridge the gap between where they are and where they desire to be. And what that really means in layman's terms, I provide leadership consulting and just effective communication with an employer, employee, or just one-on-one engagement with a person.
Now, have you always been a leader, or is this something that came later in your life?
I think it's always been there, but it was polarized with my commission in the United States Army as an Army officer, and then it just graduated as I advanced in my leadership, going throughout the years of studying John Maxwell, Robert Greenleaf, Stephen Covey, and just it evolved as something that was a part of my life and has always been a part of my life.
Now, when you were in the military, do they do a good job with leadership training?
They do. When you're first coming on as a young officer, we have what's called our officer basic courses. And in there, they start to give you some of those baseline fundamentals in AR or FM 6-22, where you be, know, do. And they give you those foundational tools. But as you advance, you begin to understand that you need to draw on some other outside influences and some other outlying materials and utilize your character and your values and some of those baseline things that you have.
Now, before you were in the military, did you do any leadership training?
I actually did not, but a caveat, I am a pastor's kid. So, and my father just so happened to be a coach all of his life. So I was able to observe early on and throughout my life as a part of, I'm the sixth of seven children. And so my father coaching, teaching, mentoring, along with my mother through the community work and also at church. So I was able to observe several great leaders that just a platform of service is kind of my background.
So when it comes to leadership on both sides of the table, it occurs to me that you are signing up for almost constant change. I mean, the whole thing is a great big never-ending change project, right?
Oh, definitely. It's in change, I see it as opportunity. And it's almost one of those situations that you shouldn't avoid it. You shouldn't try to shy away from it. It's all a part of your process. And change is evolution. And so I think all of us are all in some sort of perpetual state of evolution. So you should welcome that change because it's growth. And it's stretching, moving you towards something, especially when you get around like-minded individuals. It could definitely set you up and tee you up for some really good things to come in your life.
Now, when you are going through this transition, and that's kind of built in the process, right? Mm-hmm. You can't definitely avoid the change or the transition. Mm-hmm. How do you bridge the gap? What are some things you can do to kind of catapult you to the next level?
Well, some of the things that I've individually done myself is begin to self-actualize. And what does that mean is, I don't know how familiar you are with some of the concepts of self-actualization and actually seeing yourself, being self-aware of your gifts, your talents, your strengths and your weaknesses, but not laying and being settled where that stuff actually is, but actually being seeing where your shortfalls are, getting around, again, like-minded people who can sort of raise your lid. And also being,
what does raise your lid mean?
Well, right now, I think personally, I'm a five. But that means getting with other people who may be a six or a seven. If I'm only surround myself with other fives, there's no change occurring there. There's no way that we mm-hmm. can teach each other and grow. So I shouldn't be shy and get away from those people that are actually a little bit more skilled in their abilities, in leadership, their experiences. So gravitating and pulling in, signing up for mentors, getting personal coaches, professional coaches. Again, understanding change occurs, but identifying within yourself what's needed. So I do a lot of self-actualization and do a lot of gut checking.
So now when you're kind of doing the self-actualization and you're self-assessing yourself, mm-hmm. what do you put your buckets of strengths and weaknesses?
My strengths and weaknesses, I am a huge team player and I support very well. So that goes back to the bridging the gap. Mm-hmm. I have this innate ability to get in a room and I have to understand that I'm not in that room all the time for myself. And so what I end up doing is I end up thinking about other people that I could potentially match up and I could pair up with the person I'm actually talking to at the time. And so as I build my business and as I go through life, not being selfish with the people that I'm being exposed to and the resources that I'm being exposed to and always looking for that next pair up and that matchup for somebody else to be brought up and for them to be influenced and for their lives to be changed. And so I think because I'm always in that service mode mindset, it actually makes me feel good and actually gives me some gratification as I go about my day.
Now, is that a mistake that some people make, maybe new leaders or aspiring leaders, that they think that they have to hoard the information and make themselves valuable, that's the path to leading, is saying, I know everything, so you have to rely on me, you have to follow me?
I think that's a school of thought, that you have to be the bottleneck, and that's exactly what that is for me. And those people that hoard their information, they think it's job security, but that's the total opposite. It actually alienates yourself by saying, I'm hoarding this information. It doesn't make you valuable at all. The person in the room that's willing to resource and share themselves and give them themselves, that's the team player. That's the one everybody wants to work with. So I would rather have that mystique about myself, or that kind of, I guess, aura that everybody wants to work with me, versus he's going to sit over there in the corner. He's going to do what he's going to do and then let him leave. I don't want to be that guy, because that person you could let leave an organization.
But a lot of it, especially in large corporations, there's a lot of people that are good at, they call like playing politics.
Definitely.
Where they can kind of sense there's an opportunity. Maybe they take credit for something they didn't mm-hmm. do. Then they make it to another level. Mm-hmm. And then they're kind of hopscotching their way up the corporate ladder. Mm-hmm. Do you find that that's kind of demoralizing to the rest of the organization if you have too many of those people in there?
It can be. I've experienced it. But one of the things that I've learned, and again, going through the process of life, you gain experiences. And what happens is that person runs out of material. They can only claim credit for so long of somebody else's idea, because they didn't dream it up, because they didn't think about it. They didn't actually think about it through the entire process of that thought. And so what happens is they run out of material. And so they run out of things to say. They run out of things to be bright about. And so then they start to be like, well, that was an empty vessel. That was just... They get exposed. They have no roots in what they were actually trying mm-hmm. to talk about and portray.
The other day when the three of us were visiting, you said something about releasing oneself to be successful. Can you speak to that a little bit?
As an Army officer and as a soldier, first, one of the things that as I transitioned out, we didn't get released. I didn't get a mission statement. And so what I mean by that is, in the Army, before every operation, before everything that we did, there was a mission. There was a briefing. There was a mission briefing where you were given your purpose, vision, and your direction. Well, as I transitioned, I, for the first time, was quote unquote on my own. And as I transitioned, I wasn't released. I wasn't given a mission to be successful outside of uniform. And so you would think somebody who self-actualizes, I do all these things. For all those years, I did that for other people, but now it was on me. And so now I had to release myself to say, Lawrence, it's okay for you to be successful, you to be successful. Because there was no team. It was Team Henderson. It was me and my wife and the fur babies. And so it was one of those things. I never thought about myself as boss or as a HR specialist somewhere or just as an individual contributor, because I led for so many years. I mean, 12 and a half years of taking care of people. And then now it was me. And so it was like I had to release myself to say that it's okay for Lawrence to be successful in every endeavor that he has. And so that was a freeing moment for myself. And I didn't have to feel bad about that, because it was like I was empowering people for all those years. And now it was like, all right, who's empowering you? It's like, well, you need to step up to the plate, guy. It was like, you're actually efficient at it. So train yourself to know that it's okay to be successful.
Now, you mentioned off air about the importance of kind of bringing the bottom up. Can you talk a little bit about that?
There is a the revision series, and it was guy Hank Rowan, and it was My Little 100 Million. And so within that podcast, there was an interview with these guys who were talking about a soccer team. And they talk about the best soccer teams in the world and how there are all those players on the field and how all those passes to the superstar to score the goal. Okay, all you ever see on SportsCenter top 10 is the goal. But what about the first 9 passes, the first 10 passes? Well, if that guy who started the series of passes is not good, then the goal never happens. And so bringing the bottom up is making that guy better, investing in that guy who has to take care of that first pass or the third pass to get it to the superstar. Because a lot of organizations, they spend a lot of money on high potentials. That's a drop in the bucket. If you bring the bottom up and then invest throughout, and I'm not talking about millions of dollars, I'm talking about a 10% investment in employee engagement, talent development, it actually has a monetary value in bringing the organization up and increasing the bottom line. So once you pay attention to the bottom line and that bottom employee, that individual contributor, you invest in them, then everybody begins to get better in an organization.
Can you share some examples of maybe your leadership in action, somebody that maybe you took under your wing a little bit and helped them grow?
Definitely. Well, right now I have the privilege of working with Sheree Knowles and HR Knowledge Source, who are partnering with the Urban League Atlanta, and they have what's called their Accelerated Business Professionals Program. And so a part of this program, they have we have coaching clients. And so these are folks who are unemployed or underemployed. And so right now I have 3 clients. And so all of them at 3 different places in their lives. But last night on a call, a person, I want to say her name on air, but
yeah,
she has at a different place in her life and she's ready for transition, career transition, has extensive work background, but it's just walking it out and talking her through those different pockets of I got stuck. And so the whole point of coaching, professional coaching, is you actually have the answers. You actually have the resources, but it's asking the powerful question for you to actually understand of how to get yourself out. Because it's that old adage, all right, give a man a fish, all right, he eats for that day. Teach him to fish, he eats for a lifetime. And so it's that same adage with professional coaching, is you have the answers. It's just actually pulling those things out of a person. And those are 3 right up front cases. And then even other peers of mine that are business owners, entrepreneurs, that we constantly have conference calls. Oh, yeah, every week. And it's just powwows. It's powwows like, all right, guy, like, okay, pull yourself up by the bootstraps. All right, strap it on, put some dirt on it and, you know, keep pushing. But you need those types of things in your life.
So you've been pretty heavily influenced by speaker, author, John Maxwell. Yes, sir. I got that right?
Yes, sir.
What compelled you to sort of start hanging out with that crowd, and what are some highlights of what you think you've been able to draw from that experience?
Well, I've heard on an earlier broadcast with Mac and Rhea, but given the quick definition of leadership being influenced, early on in my career, I would say right around 2003 is when I stumbled upon the John Maxwell Leadership Bible. And in this Bible, it pointed out the 21 irrefutable laws of leadership. And so I latched on. And so it was like immediately the first law of the lid. And then, you know, you jump into the law of the process. Then you go all the way to the end and, you know, the law of legacy. And so in all those things, they were basically disciplines. And so I had great values in my life instilled from my parents. The Army had their set of values. But now these servant type of values and these disciplines resonated with the type of leader I wanted to be. And so once I latched onto them, I actually began to practice them in everyday life. Now, did I get it right all the time? Not even close. More times than not, I was totally on the other end of the spectrum because it was one of those win in charge, take charge kind of things. But as I really began to evolve and really began to live these principles and these values out, I couldn't get away from them. It was who I was. And when I wasn't acting in accordance with that servant mentality of always beginning to lift someone else, I felt off and I felt unbalanced. And so that was the real reason why I got a hold of it, because it was a point in my life. I was a young officer. I was right out of college, bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, and I needed something. And that helped ground me along with, you know, my belief in my faith.
All right. So I got to ask, you've mentioned a couple of times, I think, your spouse.
Yes.
How did she fold into this journey? Did she like look at you the first time around and say, oh, you've been to some silly seminar, you read a goofy book, you know, go in there and wash the dishes, I've been busy all day. How did all that unfold?
Well, I tell you, I would tell my version of it.
And then we'll get her.
Yeah, definitely had to get her on. You know, her chasing me around campus and stuff like that. No, we actually, is a funny story, met her last year at Ohio State, and she's a teacher by trade. And so, servant, you know, so, but she's a rock star. And she's been probably one of my biggest inspirations since, you know, I've been in the Army. And so there's a lot to be said for military spouses. And she stayed. And not only did she stay, but she held it down. So anytime I came back from a deployment, anytime I came back from training, she was rock solid and steadfast and, you know, home operation. And so she kept Team Henderson engaged, bills paid, money in the bank, and she kept us on task and on target. But her drive to be and do more individually, from a spiritual perspective, personally, made me want to be better for her and lead the home. Because at the end of the day, that's my first mission, is to lead my home effectively. And so if I don't do that effectively, how can I come out into the community and provide these services if my home's a wreck and I'm not practicing what I preach? And so I am a work in progress every single day. And she will echo that. But it's one of those that I'm glad I have that partner in crime to do life with.
And that is an important component to being a success, I think, is having that life partner that definitely is supportive and is on the team with you.
Yep, definitely. She's supported me in this path to do what I desire to do, unwavering. And her devotion to the time that I spend with it, to the community service that I do, she's my biggest cheerleader and pats me on the back. And so kind of pushing her to try to do some entrepreneur things herself. But those come.
Now, when you're dealing with people or you're meeting people that maybe aren't as educated as you are about leadership and some of the kind of core principles, do you find that some people just have a hard time wrapping their head around this servant leadership kind of mentality where I have to kind of give up a little bit before I can go up? It seems kind of counterintuitive, I would think, for some people.
It's a mind shift. It's a paradigm shift for a lot of people to think that I have to serve in order to lead or lead in order to serve and vice versa. Like you said, it's a mind shift, but to think of yourself less in regards to being an employee or individual contributor, but not, you know, thinking of yourself less, if that makes sense. It's almost that whole thing of giving up the go up is, you know, you have to give more of yourself to be a part of the team. And so I see myself as a resource. So anytime I was in leadership positions, I'm a resource for my organization. And so my main priority was, if I don't have it, if my soldiers don't have it, if my employees don't have it, how am I going to get it? And so I'm in the back room making deals. And so I'm finding those resources to bring them in. And so I expected that of them as well from mm-hmm. where they sat in the organization. Because if you just rely on my resources, now you're just leeching off of me. And so I have this bad phrase out here that people are, you know, tend to be oxygen thieves.
And we all know one or two, right?
Yeah, and they talk a real good game, but they're not a resource. And so when you start talking about servant leadership, it's literally you're in the position. You may have the title, but it's beyond that. It's you come into the organization with the sole purpose of being a resource to that organization. So that's unpositional. So being a resource is I'm here.
Right. It doesn't matter what your rank is, right? Everybody could be that.
Everybody. And so for some people that are power hungry, that are position driven and organizations all across the world, that's a mind shift for a lot of people who have been jockeying for that next title.
Right. It's more transactional relationships rather than relationships where they're trying to serve and help the whole team.
Yep.
Holistically,
yep.
instead of themselves transactionally thinking life's an ATM machine, I put a card in and money yep. shoots out the bottom.
Exactly. No investment mm-hmm. whatsoever. And so you can't expect to have a 401k or retirement fund and you never put nothing in it. So you need the lint in your pocket.
That's right. You're gonna get it. So now how important is this kind of always learning and finding kind of more information to help you become better? How much time do you spend doing that? Kind of feeding the brain
daily. It's kind of how I power down and how I start my day. Whether it's finding resources, and not necessarily how I always have to buy a book or having to invest in somebody. It's always good to definitely pay attention to who's out there and the content that's out there. But utilizing local libraries just to pull on authors that are already in libraries and different things like that. But I feed myself. Constantly, whether it's reading daily devotionals tied in with other leadership experts, because no one person has the market cornered, but there's a ton of content out here. But it's a constant mode of ciphering through like-minded individuals and then feeding yourself continually daily that kind of content. Because again, you can get lost out here because there are a lot of people jockeying for a position, trying to get a piece of this hundreds of millions of dollars industry with leadership and influence and all this other stuff. But I need to feed myself positive things.
So there are certain values that you believe are foundational.
Oh, definitely.
Can you share some of them?
Yeah. Me in particular, I believe respect and integrity are my top two in those respects. Respect for one is if I show you respect, then it's almost has to be reciprocated. Now you have those individuals, you have those one-offs that are just going to be crazy and they just going to be disrespectful to everybody. That's character flaw, but it's kind of a golden rule. And you know, you treat others how you want to be treated, but I want to treat others better than they expect to be treated. Because again, that's a matter of perspective, right? So in experience, and if you respect people in accordance with the way they want to be treated, they might take really bad care of themselves. So you don't want to meet them where they are. You want to actually one up them on their expectations. And integrity, it's doing what you're going to do when you say you're going to do it and backing your word, being a person that respects that word. And another one for me, that's kind of adopted service, but, the Army selfless service. And so again, back to the servant leadership part of it. And so for me, how am I serving? What am I going to do? I look for ways to serve on a given day. And so whether that's my wife saying, pick up your stuff, I try to beat her to that. So I try to service her need to have a clean home and, you know, go about that. But also, how am I helping my fellow man? How am I serving them? And then lastly, doing everything that I know to do with excellence. And so that's kind of the foundational thing. Did I do it with excellence or was it just average? Was it just subpar?
Do you hold yourself accountable?
Definitely. I think if you don't, you're doing life wrong. because you need to always have constant self-evaluations and self-checks, because I think that's how you can check those things off, those goals, those daily and weekly goals of having a foundation. And ultimately, if you don't grow roots somewhere in life, you're a pretty tree. Right? You're a pretty tree that could be blown over. You just go with the wind. And so I think having good values, a good foundation, you have steadfast roots. And so that is something, that's a foundation that could be built upon. And so I think all of us should strive to be in position and be rooted and grounded in a good set of values.
You guys were talking a minute ago about developing personal and professional development content. And now you have a professional obligation to develop, evaluate, share content as a practitioner. Mm-hmm. But it occurred to me while you guys were talking, you know, like a Jerry Seinfeld or a Jeff Foxworthy, I mean, they experience or can choose to experience a trip to the grocery store very different than me, right? They have a different lens and they see 10 funny stories in their trip to the Publix. So I'm wondering if, because you're so immersed in all this, if you don't experience life and see a lot of things through a different lens and just professional content just starts to create itself, does that ever happen for you?
All the time. I also am a Toastmaster. So there's one of the different projects and different things like that. They always find content, find a topic in life in everything that you do. And so what begins to happen is your lens changes. So even this conversation that we're having today, I'm going to use this somewhere in a week, 2 weeks, a month, in a workshop, in a presentation about networking, about extending yourself, about stretching yourself. And so the material and the foundations of leadership and getting out there, being comfortable with being uncomfortable, that's going to be a part of a conversation that I have with somebody. Because as it's maybe comfortable to you all right now, but I'm like jumping around inside, but I'm stretching myself. I'm building upon this foundation of where I desire to be. And so I'm not only bridging the gap for other folks, I'm bridging the gap for myself, because again, I'm in that perpetual state of change and transition. And so I look for content everywhere. Like, in riding a MARTA, I tell you what, I could write
there's a lot
book.
Of content.
There's a lot of content on the MARTA.
That could be your next book.
I'm telling you, especially after 5 p.m. 5 p.m., I got a lot of content.
Now, for the young people out there that might stumble upon this, do you have any advice for them that where they're kind of in this formative stage and there's maybe some bad influences that seem like leaders to them? Yeah. And there's some good influences that maybe they take for granted. Mm-hmm. What advice would you give this young person who's maybe in high school or middle school that is in a position where they might go to the dark side or the side of light? How would you help them?
Talk it out. I think what happens nowadays with us in society being so disconnected from actual one-on-one and communication, and in general, nobody's real, quote unquote real. And so what happens is people avoid the actual conversation of what's really going on. And so, you know, the nieces, the nephews, and it's like, okay, what's really going on? And so, and not letting go of it.
Because on social media, everything seems like it's going great.
Everything's going great. Everybody's a millionaire. And you go, you know, you can't find their house. And you get, you know, it's a P.O. box, you know. But having that conversation, where are you at with this? And then again, holding them accountable. I think that's part of the problem. Nobody has any accountability partners, or nobody has that person that's going to call them and be like, they discern when something's wrong and they're not going to let it go. You're going to be that friend. And I think everybody needs to have an inner circle of people, to include teenagers, that somebody that's going to be willing to step up and say, that's wrong. That's just flat out wrong. Not because it's in a book that it's wrong somewhere. It just feels wrong. And so I think we've gotten away from a lot of morals of just treating things and people right. And so talking about what that looks like from our vantage point is the conversation that needs to be had. And I think for the youth, and I hate calling them by their, you know, media titles, because at the end of the day, we're all people who are trying to make a transition and we're all trying to live, because each one of us have been in that generation who was the crazy generation.
Right.
And so now we're just, they just so happen to be cell phone technology generation.
Right.
But we need to treat them and meet them where they are, not try to bring them where we are and make them understand. And so again, it's just like reverse, sit where you were when your parents were trying to tell you what to do and how you felt.
And you were so much smarter than your parents, right? Right. They didn't know what they were talking. Then they got way smarter later somehow after you left.
Yeah. I was like, what is this credit card thing? Like, what is this mess? I was like, I got this figured out. Well, what, $50,000 later in debt?
Maybe not so much.
No, it's good. No, that's why I would tell them, have the conversation.
So now, is there a place, do you think... I've talked to other military people where maybe the military, as they exit the military, they can kind of integrate themselves back into the school systems to help some untethered young people.
I don't think we do enough of it from a discipline perspective backtrack a little bit.
Because the military does a great job of taking 18-year-olds and they're following the plan shortly, right?
Yeah, definitely. You break that mindset. It literally is it's a breaking process of basic training. It's like you have to unlearn all the mess that got you here.
Right.
And then now we have to build you into what we need you to be. And so again, it's that process of that maturation process through basic training, through your military occupational specialty school and different things like that. And for, you know, a young person, it's also giving up of yourself to that process, because you got those ones that they just, I don't want to break. I don't want to give up who I was. You're making me change. It's a reason why that has to happen, because I can't have you flinch on a battlefield, because you got a battle buddy to your left and to your right of you that needs you to be on your game. And so when we train, when we do maneuvers, when we do that kind of thing, it's for reasons that may be life altering and life changing, or maybe saving a life.
And it was going to your earlier point about bringing up the bottom.
Exactly. Always.
You can't have a team of superstars. This is not the all-star game, right?
No, not at all. And even in the elite organizations, in your special forces, your Rangers, your Navy SEALs, you still need to make sure the weakest link in the chain can hold their own. And so you're constantly training, you're constantly developing so that in a conflict or in a situation, it doesn't appear that you have any weak links. And so, again, it's a cohesive unit. And so you practice those maneuvers so that it's flawless. And so, yeah, bringing up the bottom and to transition into high schools from a military standpoint and bringing those youth up and meeting them where they are is a great vantage point. But I also think the military needs to do a better job of reintegrating soldiers into society. And so I think what happens to a lot of veterans and how we end up disgruntled and befuddled in life not looking the way we thought it would is because the narrative is off when you transition us. And so you think about a case of we spend hundreds of thousands of dollars, depending on an individual person, to change them from John Doe into, you know, Private Doe. And on the back end, when it's time for them to get out, we spend a fraction of that to reintegrate them into the world. And it really is a reintegration into life, because for whether you're in the military for your first initial enlistment term of 3 years, it's a mind change. And so you've been institutionalized and you've been used to doing life a certain way for a number of years, to where you've built habits, you've built things in your life. And so now to put that person back into society and, you know, add a boy and add a girl, go be great. You know, it's kind of unfair. And so those were some of the things that I found myself in and where, again, I had to release myself that it was okay. Because you sit in a funk and the narrative is, you know, you're going to have employers lined up at your door. But then you talk to recruiters, you talk to staffing agencies, and they're like, you did great things in the military, but you don't fit. And so that's why you see a lot of organizations start military transition and recruiting teams, but they're not there yet. because it's a new concept.
Right.
But over the next several years, there's going to be hundreds of thousands of soldiers released, service members released back from active duty into the community. And so what's going to happen? Does that mean our homeless population is going to increase? Because now these guys can't get a job, it can't get employment, or so severely underemployed that breaks up homes, breaks up, you know, and so there are adverse, there's second, third, and fourth effects to having a proper transition program. So that's one
it's
of my
an opportunity,
projects.
I think, for businesses to
definitely
step up and to, because this is an untapped resource that
goodness
can really elevate companies.
Definitely.
And so helping the veteran through this transition could be a good transition for these companies
definitely
to get them to the next level.
Definitely. And to get a tax break. So I don't know if they forgot about that.
There you go.
And get a tax break. So I can check some boxes off on that one.
So now what's next for you? How are you looking to grow your consultancy?
Well, what's next for me is continuing to stay and be relevant in the industry. And so being a strategic volunteer, reaching out to those organizations that are in need of my services, and not going in with my handout, going there with a product and service to say, I can help you get to this next level. And I know we talked about before, it's like that reciprocates to something. Having something available that I can hand to an organization and say, look, I've done this. Because at the end of the day, it's just like anything else, you're only going to pay for stuff that you know. And so if I go in with an invoice to every place that I walk into, it's not going to happen. So I need to build up my name. I need to build my brand. And so I'm constantly trying to build my brand through strategic volunteerism, strategic partnerships. I mentioned Sheree Knowles. And then so also just partnering with community organizations that are doing it right. And they're doing some really great things out there in the community. And so I think that's the direction I need to head. And I think I kind of checked that box when I talked to Mac, and he gave me some good tidbits on what I needed to do in the community. And so I'm heading in a good direction for my organization, and I'm not trying to rush the process. I have a good friend, Lynette David, that has a statement, don't pray past the process. And so for me, it's a long road, but it's the process on this side of life. And so I've done the Army thing, got my hero t-shirts. And so now on this side, it's like, nobody really knows your name, guy. So stop expecting people to hand you a check to teach them leadership. So it's like, you got to build your brand, build your name back up, and then it'll come. It'll happen for you. And so I'm leveraging that.
Now, for companies out there that are in need of your services, what would be the perfect type company that you would, you don't have to name their name, but the type of company, what's a need they have where you're a good fit for them?
Companies right now that I see in the talent development area, initial talent development and then sustainment training is where I see some organizations missing the mark. And so what I mean by that, I did a couple workshops with some directors and executive leaders. And what was happening is the leaders were getting trained, but their employees weren't getting trained. So we were teaching them to lead mediocre employees because it's like nobody paid attention to development. So it was like, all right, do you know your job? Check that box, and left them alone. And so the leaders invested in themselves, but not the employees.
It didn't trickle down.
It did not trickle down.
So if a company wants to invest in their employees, you have some good workshops and training that can help them move the needle in their business.
Definitely. Those come in the in packages of workshops or lunch and learns or seminars. And I can tailor it to the organization. And
it could be any industry, right?
Any industry. And because leadership and being better at being you doesn't have an industry tied to it.
Right. It's industry agnostic.
Exactly. Exactly. It's perfect. I'm going to take that. But no, you just need to come to work the best version of you.
Right. So if your organization is kind of struggling with the people maybe at the bottom rung of the of the pay scale, maybe it's a good idea to invest in some boss consulting to take them up a notch. Huh?
Oh, definitely. it's funny that people that are individual contributors, they want to do more and more times than not, but it's having the opportunity to.
And seeing the path.
And seeing the path. Because, right. And once you figure out, and I'm telling on you organizations, there is no yellow brick road to that next position. Now, it may appear to be, but and when you know more, you do more. And so exposing your employees to different ways of thinking, to different opportunities, you may trickle other characteristics and thoughts and abilities that they didn't even know they had, but it was just laying dormant. They put it on the shelf because it wasn't being utilized. And so when you show them different opportunities and you put them in different settings, you'd be like, oh, they're pretty talented. And so you may want to shift them and point them in a different direction. And I tell people all the time about professional get to knows within an organization. And so all that is a simple concept. It's kind of like we're sitting here now. You guys are talking about leadership. We're talking about something, but do that with another supervisor in another department. You don't know what you don't know. And so you may be in IT today, but you may have a passion for training and development.
Mm-hmm.
But you've always had that need to help people and teach people. You do it over there, but you didn't actually know that you could do it for a full-time job. Pair those people up.
That's right. Now, if somebody wanted to learn more and have more substantive conversation about you and your consultancy, is there a website or a way to connect with you?
Definitely is. You can reach me on email at info@bossconsultingllc.net or go to my website at www.bossconsultingllc.net and you will find all the information plus a workshop, a very long workshop on my website that you can tear apart.
Well, thank you so much for being part of the show today.
Thank you, gentlemen, for having me. It's been a pleasure.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Stone Payton. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.